Disability Advocacy Matters.
Disability Advocacy Matters.
Disability Advocacy Matters.
This is the Disability Advocacy Matters podcast from Speaking Up For You, or SUFI. I'm Nance Haxton, and together we will speak to disability advocates about some of the main issues they see and what people with disability can do about them.
Disability Advocacy Matters.
Natasha Whittaker, individual advocate from Speaking Up For You.
Tash, thank you very much for joining us on the Disability Advocacy Matters podcast.
Thanks, Nance. Nice to be here.
Well, today we're going to talk about this huge beast, which can be the health system, and the interaction that many people with disability have, obviously, with the health system. Sometimes it doesn't go really smoothly, does it? Can you tell us a bit about your experiences with it as an advocate?
Yeah, no worries. No, it doesn't go very smoothly. A lot of time especially for people with autism or intellectual disability or on treatment orders, forensic orders, or people in mental health wards. There's also, you know, come to SUFI if you've got a family member who is inappropriately placed in a mental health ward and they have autism or intellectual disability and no mental health issues, because SUFI can try to help address that inappropriate placement.
So you've helped with that in the past, yeah?
Yes, yeah, I have. It's not appropriate, especially with autism and the noise in psychiatric wards and things like that. It can be really difficult for people to cope with.
Ooh.
So I found in hospitals everything's very risk-focused, overly risk-focused, really, and, you know, there's a lot of restrictions on people. They can have phones taken off them. They can be told they can't call people outside of the hospital if they're in mental health. They have a lot of sort of rights taken away that shouldn't be taken away. People are allowed to go to their stakeholder meetings when they're in hospital with their treating teams, with their whoever's looking after them. A lot of people don't know they can be involved. They can take a loved one with them, or they can have an advocate. And having an advocate is very beneficial in those situations, because we can ask that you're involved in your what's going to happen with your treatment. And we can also close the gaps in communication, because often in the big health systems, everybody has their own job and their own agenda, and they don't really check to see if other people have done the things that need to be done for your sort of treatment to progress through to being out of hospital.
And it tends to be very cost-focused too a lot of the time, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And there's a very big line in the sand between what NDIS can do when you're in hospital and what, yeah.
It's a bit of a tussle between the NDIS and health, and you can sometimes get caught in between.
Yeah, definitely. There's things that the hospitals say they won't do and NDIS isn't allowed to do because they're in hospital, and, yeah, it can be very difficult to navigate. So having an advocate is a very good idea if you can, especially with dignity of risk, with least restrictive options, with, I know it's very hard for an advocate to question medication when we're not medical practitioners, but we can always try to help you get an independent review with a clinician from outside of the hospital so that you can have your medication reassessed.
Ooh.
Those kind of things are quite hard to navigate when you're in hospital and you don't have support.
And really amplify the voice of the person with disability who may not feel they're being heard in that big system.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's very easy for people and their family to feel very overwhelmed and just sit back and let people sort of do what they're going to do because your voice is being quietened.
And what about when people are discharged? That has some complications too, doesn't it, sometimes?
Is that with medically discharged?
Yes.
Yeah, there's been some cases where somebody might end up in hospital because of a medical condition, but they've got a disability, and then either they lose the house they're in because they're in hospital for a long time, or they, for some reason, they don't have anywhere to go. Once you're medically discharged, you get charged about $60 to $70 a day to stay in hospital. So we've had cases where people have paid SDA rent while they're waiting for a house and hospital bill, or they've got their rent at home that they have to pay as well as being hospital if they haven't lost their house. And if you're over 18, it's not your parents' or your family's bill, it's your bill. So don't, you know, families should know that it's not their bill if their child or loved one can't pay the bill because they're on the disability pension, or it's all got to be negotiated with the hospital. And an advocate could also help with that situation too. But a lot of people don't know that once you're medically discharged, then you actually have to pay to stay in hospital.
Oh, so advocacy can help with that?
Yeah, it can. We can help if the process hasn't been followed, and help discuss sort of waiving your bill or reducing your bill or what you pay the hospital per day because of your income. We can always have a go at negotiating that for people.
I suppose for people, we mentioned mental health difficulties before too. There are so many different mental health specialists that you deal with. It must get very confusing, I think, for people with disability.
Very, very confusing. And they have so much power, especially if you're on a forensic order or a treatment order, they have so much power over your choices that it's a very difficult situation to navigate because of that power imbalance.
So advocacy can help there too?
It has helped in my experience, just because the person can talk to us, we can send an email of what they want to know and kind of sort of prompt all the stakeholders in the hospital to sort of start moving forwards with things and start listening to the person and answering their questions and
have like stakeholder plans and things like that.
Exactly, transition, transition out of hospital plans and all those kind of things can be all, we can help keep people accountable to those things.
Particularly when restrictive practices are involved as well, it's pretty good to have an advocate on your side, whether that's here through Sufi or through a family member, I would have thought.
Most definitely, yeah. If you've got capacity, I suppose it's a bit easier to sort of challenge restrictive practices, but if you've got an intellectual disability, it's sort of hard for families to challenge restrictive practices when the hospital's the one putting the restrictive practices on people. It's really hard to negotiate that dignity of risk and the least restrictive options for people.
So advocates can really help in opening up that communication, can't they? Because sometimes I think, and doctors only come to the hospital and do their rounds at certain times, or it can be really hard to get that communication open.
It certainly can. And we kind of fill in the little gaps in the communication for people. It is really handy. And we're there for the person, so we keep the person and their family updated on everything that they've asked and everything that's going on. It just makes, I suppose, if I was in hospital and I had an advocate, I would feel a lot more safer knowing, being, you know, up to date with what's going on for me and what's happening.
So if you are in hospital and you don't feel like your care is appropriate, you know, you've got a bit of a gut feeling that it's not going the way you want it, there are a couple of rules that people can really know about and have kind of handy in their back pocket to use, aren't there? Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I can. So Ryan's rule is one of them. It's a Queensland health process that you can basically enact. You can start with the doctor or nurse that's caring for you. If you're not happy with their answer, then you can go to the nurse in charge of the ward. If you're not happy with their answer, then you call 13 Health and they'll start the Ryan's Rule review process for you. You can ask for an independent person that's not involved with the hospital, an independent doctor, to actually do the review. Some people don't know that, which I think is very important to ask for someone that's external to the hospital, because the hospital you're at, obviously, they're doing the treatment and they think that's what's right, but it's not working. So it's always good to get a fresh set of eyes, an outside person to have a look at what's going on for your loved one. The patient can do it, carers can do it, family can do it, anyone can enact Ryan's rule. And it's not very well known, but it has saved quite a few lives over its time. So it's a good one to have in your back pocket.
Are there some technicalities with Ryan's Rule maybe that people aren't familiar with as well? I think a lot of people have heard of Ryan's Rule, but maybe they don't know all the particular ins and outs of that.
I was speaking to someone, you know, not long ago that said they had an issue just within the hospital. They'd done 3 Ryan's Rules and didn't know that an independent clinician could be accessed. And when that independent clinician was accessed, they actually found out what was wrong. So, and they didn't know that they could get an independent person to come in. And so I suppose that's the only sort of thing. If you know to talk to your nurse and doctor, you know to talk to the nurse in charge, you know, then you can ring 13 Health and ask for Ryan's Rule review process to start. Then it's fairly simple from there. And then if you're not happy with their process, you can go independent, or you can just ask for an independent person straight away.
Great. And what about, there's another one called Julian's Key. What is that about?
Julian's Key is like a Queensland health initiative. It is came about with the family's wishes because they had, you know, an experience with hospital that wasn't
ideal.
No, they did a trial of it. It was on Android, Apple tablets. It was an app, sorry. But they've just done the PDF. There's a PDF filler, or you can download a PDF from the Queensland Health website under Julian's Key Health Passport. And it just has all the information about your loved ones. Best to have it done before they go to hospital as a like preventative measure, more than going through the stress of trying to do it while they're actually in hospital. Mm. And it's like a traffic light system. The most important information down to sort of the least but still important information. Things that trigger the person, you know, things that upset them, things they need when they're in hospital. If it's a disability-related thing that the hospital might know about, you can upload NDIS information so they know what services you've got, if you've got a behaviour support plan, if you've got enduring power of attorneys, advanced health directories, all that stuff goes in the one document so the hospital have it at their fingertips. And I think the trial did have really good outcomes. It just, the tablet sort of phone version didn't go as well as like the PDF. So
download that if you can.
Yeah.
I imagine that would be really invaluable for people, particularly with intellectual disabilities, who can't communicate their wishes as well in hospital.
Yeah, most definitely. And less stressful for families when they're repeating themselves to all different nurses. It's just all there for the health service to refer to and make their care a lot less stressful in hospital when all that stuff's there for the hospital.
And there's even other options beyond that. You can possibly go to the Health Ombudsman, the Queensland Ombudsman, is that right?
Yeah, yep. When you make sort of, if you've got issues with your care, you probably start with the, you know, the doctors, the nurses in charge of the ward. Then there's the patient liaison officers, that their details are on the website. If you look up, say, Prince Charles Hospital, it'll have the patient liaison officers on the Queensland Health website. You can email or contact them about your experience, even if it's after you've been to hospital. If you're not satisfied with their response, they'll give you a response letter, and then you can go to the Health Ombudsman, the Queensland Ombudsman. Private and public can go to the Health Ombudsman. So it doesn't have to just be public health patients. And obviously, lastly, the Minister for Health, you can contact them. But if you don't do all the steps before the Minister of Health, you'll probably get sent back to do those steps before the Minister of Health will help you.
So it's a good sort of last resort in a way.
Yes,
if you've still gone through everything and still not happy, not feeling like you've been looked after, you can go down that road.
Yeah, yep, definitely.
And what about advocates have also helped with advanced health directives as well? What are those?
They're like a document where you can make all your sort of directions that what you would like for your care in the future, anything you sort of wish, you can have it written down in an advanced health care directive. And there's a mental health care directive as well that you can do for when you're in mental health treatment systems. You can also appoint someone as your power of attorney through this. One of our advocates has helped someone do the whole EPOA advanced health care directive, so that they feel safe when they go to hospital, especially if you've got sort of an illness that you may degenerate and your capacity might become sort of a bit less. You can have all those important wishes on paper for the hospital, for everybody, ambulance, for everybody to know when you go into care.
Really gives you a peace of mind, I imagine.
Yeah, most definitely. The forms are on the Queensland Government website, so you can download all of that there. The EPOA, I think you can get the advanced healthcare directives on there as well, so and advocates can help you locate all that.
And what about for people with mental health issues? There are actually patients' rights advisors that you can talk to as well.
Yeah, there is. It's patient rights advisors. They're meant to be independent under the Mental Health Act 2016. The hospital is supposed to provide these independent rights advisors for people in mental health institutions, hospitals. So I don't know how many people know about them, but when you're in mental health, they can advise you on your rights, whether you can, if you're on a forensic order, you may not have access to a phone, but they can sort of tell you your rights when it comes to contacting people outside of the hospital, because you should still be able to contact family, loved ones, make phone calls about things that you want to know from inside the hospital. They give you rights on whether you can consent or not consent to treatments. If you haven't got like a treatment order because of perceived lack of capacity, then you have a lot more rights to not consent to treatments. It's a bit more difficult if you've got a treatment order or a forensic order, but it's always worth having an advocate asking the patient rights advisors what rights you do have, even though you do have a treatment order or a forensic health order.
Yeah, so it's that can be voluntary or involuntary as well. That's an important point, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you don't have to be just a voluntary. If you're involuntary, you can still have a patient rights advisor, which people probably think if I'm involuntary, I don't have any rights because they've told me I have to be here and I have to undergo this treatment. And everybody is allowed to have conversations with these independent patient rights advisors when they're in mental health.
But it is a little bit different if you have a treatment authority and you, lack of capacity. It's a little bit different then.
Yeah, that's right. But families, carers, loved ones can also talk to the patient rights advisors.
Oh, okay.
And find out their loved ones' rights as well. So it's not just for, it's for everybody, for all to find out what your rights are in the hospital. So if, you know, your loved one has impaired capacity, then you can speak to the independent patient rights advisors and find out what rights your loved one has.
And you have a treating team that you can be involved in the meetings for that as well?
When you're having a mental health admission, you've usually got a treating team with psychologists, psychiatrists, other doctors, nurses, mental health nurses, all sort of deciding on your treatment. And a lot of people don't realise that they can be involved in those meetings. So if you're in hospital and you're not being involved in those meetings, I would either ask. If you can't, if they say no, then I'd get the independent patient rights advisor or an advocate to try and help you be included in those, because your say on your treatment is really important.
And I suppose it comes back to really the central part of advocacy, isn't it? Is that knowing that you have a right to have your human rights protected and your wishes respected.
That's exactly right. And a lot of people, especially on the like harsher orders, don't think they have any rights. But the Human Rights Act isn't not for people on treatment orders or forensic orders, it's for everyone. So everyone has their rights to their right to have their human rights acknowledged when they're being cared for in a hospital.
And that includes having the right to communicate with people outside of the hospital.
Exactly. A lot of hospitals will take your mobile phone off you because they perceive that as a issue, or they mightn't let you use the phone as often as you'd like to use the phone. So all that you can negotiate with a patient rights advisor, or definitely with an advocate's help.
And you can ask the advocate to help you to make a complaint if necessary as well?
Most definitely, yep. Yep, any issues you have, an advocate can help you raise. May not even have to be a complaint, may just be that no one's brought it up yet and you feel disempowered. So having an advocate bring it up makes people sometimes think, oh, okay, maybe we should let them do that. We hadn't thought of that. Or it might, yeah, it might just be that they're busy.
And also you have a right to a second opinion. I can imagine that wouldn't be communicated always.
No, probably not. When you're on a, even if it's a forensic order, treatment order, if you feel like your medication needs to be reassessed and the hospital is saying, no, it's fine, I think it's right, then you can actually request an independent psychiatrist from a different hospital, different area, to come in and reassess your medication to see if it is actually right for you.
So that statement of rights is online, and carers and family and patients, they can read that. We really should probably put that link into the show notes, actually, because understand their rights.
Yeah, that'd be a really good idea, yeah. Mm. When I've been in mental health wards, that's not something that's visible. I haven't really seen that sort of advertised, or whether it's a flyer somewhere that people sort of may not see, but yeah, definitely it's online, just statement of rights for under the Mental Health Act.
And advocates, it's really important to, I think, underline that you're independent. Advocates are independent and really there for the person with disability.
That's exactly right. You know, if the hospital says they think this is your treatment and you say, I'm not comfortable with that treatment, we aren't going to side with the hospital. We're going to keep trying to convey your wishes to the hospital until either a compromise or, you know, something sort of occurs that makes you feel happier with your care.
And you've found some research, I think, which actually backs this up as well. It's not just the advocates who've had this experience, Tash. It really shows that the issues in mental health service provision particularly, there's some pretty challenging aspects there that aren't really being addressed, aren't there?
Yeah, there sure are. The research it's one article I read was just University of New South Wales and Griffith University, and it was Giantoli and his colleagues in 2019. So they did some research and spoke to carers, patients in mental health, and sort of asked what the main issues were when you're in a mental health service. And some of the things they found were like the culture in mental health wards can sometimes be quite paternalistic, which means parental, like the hospital feels like they know what's best for the person rather than you're the person in the hospital with the mental health issues and you're the expert on what you need, but there's a lot of sort of paternalism of, I think this is what you need, and it's not always what is needed or wanted. So just communicating your needs gives you a better chance to have the kind of care that you, and maybe have them listen. They discuss sort of barriers to communicating, as we've discussed, talking to people outside the hospital. There's sometimes restrictions put on people to that they can't talk with family and friends outside. Phone removal was a common practice that they found that people sort of mentioned. There's very little protections for people in hospitals that have intellectual disabilities and no mental health issues. So they go to a psychiatric ward and then it's totally inappropriate. I think there's the Carter report from quite a while ago discusses how inappropriate intellectual disability and mental health sort of care is. It sort of doesn't match up. Yeah. People feel like when they're in a mental health service, if they speak up about their actual care, that they will get worse care sort of some kind of a retaliation from the hospital. I'm not saying that happens, but that's the perception that people have. When they did the research, they found that out. Mm. The second opinion thing under the Mental Health Act 2016, you're allowed the second opinion again from another practitioner.
But not many people know about it.
No, that's right. Mm. And just the shortage of protections, I suppose, that was another thing that was found, that advocates do try and help people to have their medications reassessed. But I suppose because we don't have the medical qualifications, there is quite a few barriers to us actually getting through to the hospital. So I'm not saying that we won't try our hardest, but that is one of the barriers that people mentioned that they had with the advocates, was being able to get that across to hospitals. So, yeah, and basically just the overuse of restrictive practices and seclusion and things like that when you've got an intellectual disability in a mental health hospital. Yeah, that was another thing that there was a bit of an overuse of, and it's not really appropriate, you know, seclusion and containment. When you're out of the hospital, then you sometimes got to build your capacity and you build things back up again because you've been treated, you've been sort of isolated. And somebody sort of mentioned to me previously that they felt like they lost their communication skills because they didn't talk to anyone for ages. So it's not okay. So it's something we can help with too.
Oh, it sounds like it's just so important that we have advocates available. If you don't have a family member or a friend who can be that advocate, then it's worth talking to an advocacy service to get some, you know, someone to stand with you through these issues.
Most definitely, because it's so easy for your voice to get lost in the, you know, I've been in stakeholder meetings that there's been like 30 something people. It's so easy for your voice to get lost, especially if you're not medical. You're not a medical practitioner, you can sometimes get a bit drowned out. So it's very important that if you feel like your voice isn't being heard, to reach out for an advocate.
Sufi is here to amplify your voice if you have a disability.
That's right, we are.
Thank you, Tash. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to finish our episode on advocacy within the health system?
Possibly just one more thing about the catchment areas. You hear people say, I had a really bad experience at this hospital, but it's in my catchment and I have to go there. I have been told that the catchment areas aren't hard and fast, so just either get an advocate and we can help push or keep pushing, because you don't have to go to the hospital in your area if you've had a really bad experience. It's traumatising, and going back there is just not... you need to get care. And if you can't go to somewhere because you're so traumatised, then you need to go somewhere else, and that should be okay.
Such handy information you've given us today, Tash. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Nance.
This episode was recorded and produced on the lands of the Turrbal and Yagara people, and we pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. That's all for this episode of the Disability Advocacy Matters podcast from Speaking Up For You. This podcast was produced for SUFI by Nance Haxton, with production assistance from Michael Adams. Speak to you again soon.
Disability Advocacy Matters.
Disability Advocacy Matters.
Disability Advocacy Matters.
Disability Advocacy Matters.
It matters.